We are excited about today. Ginny started by saying she's excited. We're excited about today because we're putting the puzzle together. We're putting the puzzle together around the things we've invested in, and we put a lot of money to work last year. You know, Ginny noted that at the end of March, with everything we've announced, we would have invested more in acquisitions in that 12 months than we have in any other period in IBM history. We're excited about the progress we're making in the transformation, and as Ginny said, you know, she said we're going to let you listen to our clients. We're going to show you the leaders of the businesses, and she also said we're going to share a lot of data. That's what it's time for. We saw videos, you saw clients. It's data time. So let's spend a minute on how we're going to split this up. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the path we've traveled, because I think it's important that everyone has a good grounding on what's driven the changes you've seen in our financial results. So I'll spend a little bit of time on that. That's a revenue story. We'll talk about profit. We'll talk about cash flow. And keep in mind what Ginny started with. While we're emerging as a cloud platform and cognitive solutions company, we are a high-value company. That's very important, and you'll see it throughout this discussion. Secondly, a number of questions, I got them during the lunch and the other sessions. We got them on stage. We want to talk more about software, what's going on with our software business, and then we're going to talk also about our GBS business. And then we're going to finish with an enormous amount of data on the new segmentation. Not everything we're going to give you, because we're going to come out with more in the end of March before we report, but we're going to give you sort of the scope and scale of what we're going to release. And it really is, as Ginny noted, is really designed around this idea that we want to make sure that you can track our progress as we transform the business, that you can see the results of the investments we're making, and that you can see the kinds of businesses we're building. So we're going to do all that. I know what the agenda said, but we're going to do all that in under 4 hours. So don't worry. We should be okay. First, continuous transformation of IBM. Now, we've used all the, we've said IBM is transforming. IBM is always transforming. And we've also said it's continuous because we are constantly shifting, whether that's the portfolio or that's elements of the portfolio. You can hear it in, for instance, when Bridget says, we used to have a big business in enterprise implementations, and we did. Now, she has, on a GBS scale, she's been moving a lot of her resources into digitizing the front office of our clients. That's where they're investing. So when we say transformation, it happens not only at a portfolio level, but it also happens within every business unit. When we put all that together, I'm going to give you more detail in a moment on what drives these dynamics, but when you put all that together and you look over now, just snap the line over 10 years, we've provided data on the right that sort of gives you kind of the big puts and takes. Our divestitures over the last 10 years have been about $13 billion. So the starting point, 91 to 82, we took out 13 because it was the right thing to do. I'm going to show you this chart in profit, and you'll notice what's not there is divestitures, because they don't have much of a profit impact. That's why we get out of them. I'm going to come back to that. We've acquired over 130 companies over the last 10 years. We're very active acquirers. As Ginny noted, we acquired or are in the process of closing now 15 over the last 12 months. That's a lot of activity. We have terrific capability around how we integrate those acquisitions. As John Kelly noted, those acquisitions, the flavor of those starts to change a bit now, where we're building platforms. But we are an acquisitive company. But you can also see that while what we acquire is a fairly small revenue base, it does allow us to transform the business, and we build bigger businesses off this. You should not interpret this as we have $8 billion of acquisitions of everything we bought over the last 10 years. We've grown these businesses. And keep in mind, our model is we take the intellectual property we buy and we expand it onto a global scale. Now we're building platforms. So acquisitions have been part of the model. They'll continue to be part of the model. I'll come back to this point when we talk about the fuel in the machine that allows us to allocate capital the way we do. But acquisitions will continue to be a part of our model. And finally, currency. Over the last 10 years, it's been about $5 billion. It's been about a $5 billion impact. Now, over the longer term, we would expect that it's kind of neutral. Now, I don't know if that's 15 years or 20 years. I don't do currency cycles. Over the last 10, it's been about 5. Over the last 5, however, it's been 10. So we've been in, as we've talked about, we've been in a dramatic dollar strengthening. We have always said, and we continue to believe that weak dollar is on balance better for IBM, but we're in a strong dollar environment. It had a big impact. So you can see our growth rates now. The growth rate over the last 10 years of down one is driven primarily by divestitures and currency. We got a little bit, not even quite a point, a little bit out of acquisitions. Again, we've grown those acquisitions from there, but in general, we're kind of a low growth company. But we're very high value. You can see the margin that we've noted on the chart, 40% to 51%. So we've made a lot of progress over 10 years. I'm going to talk about how we've done that. I'm going to talk about not only how we've expanded the margin, but I'm going to show you the data on what the impact is of as a service. And we've been making a lot of investments in the structure that it takes to build an as a service business. I'll show you that data as well. We still see opportunity, though, to continue to grow margins. This 51, if you look at the distribution of margins across the S&P, this puts us in the top third. Now, that's a pretty good spot to be in. It's certainly a demonstration that we're high value, but we still see opportunity to do more. So let's now disaggregate the revenue for a moment, because as we've talked about on our calls, we've been really clear that the revenue really reflects two elements. Let's start with the minus 11 from 2015. So our core businesses, as Ginny noted, our core businesses, some of them are in declining markets. That's okay, they're high value. By the way, some of the things we've divested that aren't high value, we're growing. So it's not like everything that declines has to be sold. The definition or the framework for divestitures is really about the value we see that they can drive, not necessarily about the growth trajectory of the market they serve. So the minus 11, some of it is, again, declining markets. But as Ginny said, the majority of this decline, outside of that, is the engineering we're doing to shift our GBS business. I showed you that in the second section here, I'm going to cover GBS and software. I'm going to come back to GBS, but there's an engineered shift going on that's having an impact on that minus 11. There's also, as Tom Rosamilia just spent a little bit of time on, an engineered shift in our high disk business. We are getting out of, moving away from, if you will, all the investment we're putting into spinning disk because it's the margin, the value isn't there. And we're moving that into flash. That's where the value is. So there is an engineered component. That's why the minus 7 goes to minus 11, because we're driving that shift harder. As we drive that shift harder, the IBM financial model will still close because we're still moving to a better place. I'm going to come back to the margins in a second, but let's look at the revenue line on strategic imperatives. You saw us last year, we were pretty, it was almost uncanny, 19, 19, 19, 19. We did 26 last year. We accelerated. We accelerated, driven by the investments we're making. We accelerated, driven by the actions that the management's taking to get into those spaces faster. Why do we want to be in them faster? Look at the margin profile we're seeing. We have better margins on the places we're going than we do on the places we've been. Again, these are still high value, a lot of these businesses. But we have better margins where we're going. That's sort of exemplary, I guess, of what Bridget talked about when she said, look, there's a lot of price pressure in the large ERP implementation space, but we have a lot of differentiation in digitizing the front office. We have a lot of differentiation in our professionals' ability to create the future smarter commerce solutions, cloud services solutions within GBS. They drive higher margins. Now, we formed our cognitive solutions consulting capability only at the end of last year. But the margin profile for that, again, given the expertise, I would expect to look a lot like these higher margins again. So the idea, the principle, the goal, the output, whatever you want to call it, of what Ginny describes as a shift, a move to higher value, is this. We move to where we see better margins. And you can see it now, again, in our strategic imperative gross profit. When we say shift is it sort of becomes a catch-all for lots of things. It's not like a person was doing one thing and now we call it something else. That's not what a shift is. We are doing different things. In fact, we're doing different things. That's why we get different margin profiles. So it's not the same thing we used to do called something else. I think it's really important, and we've spent now a number of hours, all the business leaders were up here talking about, here's what we're doing now, here's what we're doing differently. So I won't read all the new capabilities, but you can see that the things we've invested in aren't doing the same things that we did a year ago or 2 years ago. we're shifting dramatically. When I get to the segment reporting section, I'm going to show you the progress we made in that shift. But again, shift is a bit too shorthand to understand fundamentally how many new capabilities we have and how we're reinventing the rest of that business or the rest of our businesses. So new capabilities drive higher margin, and reinvention of what we already have is also driving higher margin. When we look at margin, and we shared this perspective last year with everyone on how do we drive this very consistent margin improvement year after year after year, because now, you know, it's more than 10 years in a row we've driven margin improvement, and we'll do it again this year. We've driven that with software mix. Software has higher margins. You'll see that when we talk about our segments. The software mix within our segments is going to in some ways help you predict where our margins are going. We do it through a more productive services delivery platform. Bridget talked a little bit about GBS, but you also heard it from Martin in GTS on how we embed automation and how we drive productivity on a global scale in our services business. And that will continue to drive margin. There's still a lot of opportunity for us there. And then we do it also by rebalancing our portfolio, maybe in hardware. As an example, we divested of our X-Series business. That was low margin. Our margins are better. We also run all of IBM on a globally integrated enterprise, which allows us to operate and optimize an $80-plus billion corporation as opposed to a series of smaller entities. So we run the entire corporation on a platform that allows us to drive productivity. That's been the definition of how we've improved our margins. Within that is a small impact on all the investments we've made to build our as-a-service platform. And we've talked about those over the years because they're also an impact. You can see it in the year-to-year impact of our profits. But on a margin base, with all the investments we've made, and I would argue that we've put, on a relative basis, we've put the maximum amount of investment relative to the minimum amount of revenue because we're just starting to build this. We've put that right now has only impacted us by about half a point of margin, half a point on 51. So with that as a base, I think we have a lot of opportunity now to drive margin improvement and to add this to the category of what will drive margin improvement. So software mix will still continue to drive margin through that. As we've shared, the software mix in our strategic imperatives is higher than it is in the rest of the business. We've got a lot of work underway, both Bridget and Martin talked about, on how they're going to drive productivity in services. That's still in front of us as well. We'll continue to manage the portfolio and optimize the global delivery platforms of IBM. And now we can add to this margin opportunity as we drive scale in the as-a-service platform. We're only at 51. Yes, we're at the top third, but we're only at 51. I think we got room here. So now when we look at PTI over the last 10 years, 5 years, and again, we snapped the line at 2015. We know a little bit about some of these things going forward, but for now, we'll snap the line over the last 10 years. The last 10 years, we've grown profit, PTI, by about $5 billion, about $5 billion. All of that has come from growth in software and services over the last 10 years. Hardware has shrunk. Hardware shrunk. You know, Doug and Tom came up and talked a bit about how we've transformed our hardware business. The reason we had to transform our hardware business is because of the profitability of those platforms used to be this big, and it's been shrinking. It's been shrinking. So between software and services giving all the growth, hardware taking a little bit away over the last 10 years, but now transformed, and then currency has been a small headwind over that time period. Now, we snapped the line at 2015. We also know, and we've been clear that in 2016, a lot of the currency benefit from the hedges for last year will go away. So if we were to snap this line, that billion-dollar benefit would essentially be eliminated, and then we'd have a long period of time where currency was roughly neutral in profit. Now, that's not true in the last 5 years, and obviously if we snap the line in the last 5 years, that billion or less than a billion in profit from currency is going to more than double. But over the last 5 years even, it's really just been hardware. So profitability over the last five has been down about 2.5, and it's hardware, more than a billion of its hardware, and some of its currency. That's sort of majority of the profit performance over the last 5 years. Now, the reason this high-value thought is so important is because it also drives the cash flow equation. Now, we spent a lot of time with you last year on cash flow. Last year, we were describing a cash realization performance that was looking to be under pressure But we described, and I think everyone understood, that we have a cash tax rate that happened to be very high relative to our book rate, and we had a gain. We talked about now last year was that was 14, 15. We leveled off our free cash flow. We actually grew a little bit, but a stable base of free cash flow, and that fuel in the engine is what drives the transformation of IBM. Both because we invest quite heavily, obviously, already in R&D. Arvind described some of that, and Ginny was really clear. We're not looking at research and development as let's just do research projects. These things do turn into real businesses for IBM. We also reinvested heavily over those years in capital to build out our cloud platform. Robert talked about the data centers he has around the world, the cloud pods he has around the world in order to drive the hybrid story and our point of view on hybrid. And then, of course, we've acquired. I said, over 130 companies, $27 billion in reinvested. And then, as you know, we return our money, we return the cash to you. So we reinvest at a rate where we see value. We're not out reinvesting in things that's just going to drive revenue. We reinvest to drive value. And then we return excess capital to you. And over the last 10 years, we've been able to do $33 billion of dividends, and we've been able to reduce our share count by 37%. That is the IBM model. That's the IBM model. That's what you bought. You bought a company that has a point of view on where technology is going. It's going to make investments where it sees value. It's going to drive those investments to profitability, and it's going to return capital to you. It's easy to say. It's probably a little bit more complex than that to do, but it's easy to say. So, we've talked about segments, and we've talked about solutions. But we included this chart because don't try to read into layers and stacks. It's not a technology chart. It's an illustrative chart, and what it illustrates is that the world as we see it, and our point of view is that the world is moving toward more solutions. So when Deborah talked about Watson Health, remember she said the reason this works and what the world the health industry needs, they need a cloud to do this. You can't do this all on your own systems. We need security because you have to protect your clients' data. You need not only the data, John Kelly made the case, Deborah made the case, not only do we need the data, but we need the cognition and the analytics around it. You need the technology services to run that so it's always there and it's always available. And then you need a whole series of industry skills to make it work on an industry context. Health is one example, but we can go through a number of others. The world is moving to solutions. The world is moving to solutions. So last year when we said 80% of IBM's clients buy from clients who've deployed cross IBM solutions, that's only going to continue to grow. That's only going to continue to grow because our point of view, industry is what's going to drive the acceptance and the implementation of all of the things we've talked about. In fact, when you look at our disclosures, I'm sure everyone reads our K. You probably read it already because it's been out for a few days. It would make me happy if you read it, because we spend a lot of time on it. You'll see in our disclosures, you see like 2.5 pages on revenue, on our revenue streams. But the reason I bring it up in the context of this, the first section is all about solutions. There's a fancier accounting word. I think we call it multiple element arrangements or something. But that's really about solutions. So the reason we have so much disclosure on this is because these solutions are complex. They're complex. They're unique to us. But that's what we start with because the bulk of our clients are buying solutions. We also talk, by the way, in all that disclosure, we talk about the elements around hardware and software and services uniquely, but it comes after that sort of that solutions focus, which is right up front. I think it's a very important, you don't have to have that point of view, but it's very important to understand that's our point of view. Solutions are what drive this, and those are on an industry base. So when we look now at a quick summary of just those last 10 years, it's been significant. It's been significant. Significant in not in the sense that that we had 20% revenue growth. We didn't. In fact, our biggest impediment to revenue growth is probably our desire to divest and not tie up your capital where there is no profit to be had. We divested a lot of revenue. So significant transformation of the portfolio, significant reinvestment to drive value. But always with a focus on value and returning your capital to you when we find it in excess. When we look at our longer-term model, and Ginny closed her comments on this, we still see a portfolio that drives, over the long term, low single-digit revenue performance. That's what we're focused on. That's what we're focused on. And within that, our shift to higher value will drive mid-single-digit profit growth, and with our return of capital, it'll drive high single-digit EPS growth. And we'll do all that, we'll do all of that with a free cash flow base where profitability is going to drive that free cash flow base, and it'll grow with the profitability of the firm. But it's a very, very stable and value-focused model, high-value-focused model. So unit focus. Let me introduce this by making sure we all have the data in our head of why we picked these two. So IBM, as you know, in 2015, we reported back in January full-year revenue, ex-currency, ex-divestitures, full-year revenue down 1%. All of IBM wasn't down 1%. In fact, Ginny noted, you know, we made a lot of progress in GTS, right? Backlog's growing, revenue's growing, signings are growing. We made a lot of progress in GTS. That's on the right side of the chart. Tom talked about systems hardware reinvented. Sure, it's smaller than it was 10 years ago, but we got back to growth. In fact, Doug said it. Doug mentioned that two other people mentioned it, so I'm going to mention it too. Four quarters of growth last year in Power. That's the first time Power's grown in a while. So we are really proud of the team, the job the team has done in transforming that systems business back to growth. Global financing grew. So that's the right side of the chart. We're talking about now the two units that declined. We've talked a little bit about GBS. I'm going to share some more data, but I want to start with software. Start with software. Now, we've talked on the calls about this idea that flexibility that we're giving our customers is driving the decline in the transactional base. First, I want to describe a little bit about how our clients consume our software. So, and this is indicative, right? We have a everything we negotiate, obviously, for with our clients on what works for them. We try to structure it for what suits their business, and you can buy a single product for a single country. That's sort of the limited flexibility side. I want 20 licenses for Germany. Got it. You get 20 licenses, you put them in Germany. On the high flexibility side, and by the way, these are our largest clients, they don't buy 20 licenses for Germany. They buy 1,000 licenses of something. It's not just for commerce. It's for commerce and security and for database and for middleware and everything else. So they buy access to 1,000, and they say, look, I don't know where I'm going to need them yet, so I need to deploy them globally. Now, in the limited flexibility side, when you buy 20 licenses for Germany and you want one for the UK, you come back in and buy one for the UK. In a global deployment model, when you have 1,000 licenses, you put them wherever you want. You put them wherever you want. Now, what's important in that model? Important is the usage. Is it getting deployed? When we look at that, we look at the deployment. Obviously, we have people who engage with our clients to help them deploy. But we look at that deployment because that deployment is what drives the SNS stream, subscription and support stream. That's driven by deployment, not by signing a transaction. So it's only when they deploy do we keep the SNS stream going. So the great signpost then is is your software being used? Well, if SNS, if subscription and support, if the annuity content is growing, then your software is being used more. So let's talk about what our data looks like. The data on the right is the annuity base. The data on the left is transactional. And again, I've tried to describe this without data, but I think it really helps to see it pictorially. The annuity revenue base is growing. It's up 1%. Now, that's not consistent across all of our revenue streams. Certain products are declining. Certain products are growing faster. I'll come back to that when I start talking about some of our segments. But the annuity stream is growing, and it's growing both in our largest customers and in our customers that have less access to the catalog, growing across the board. On the left side of the chart, our transactional business. The customers who aren't in that largest, out of the non-top 250, they continue to grow. They continue to consume transactionally more. Obviously, they're consuming more of it. That's why it's in the SNS space that way. But they're consuming more of our software transactionally. It's outside the non-top 250 or the biggest of our clients that are consuming more. But that doesn't mean it has to drive a transaction every 90-day period when we report. And that's the part of our software business that's been in decline. Now, because these are our biggest customers, and remember, some of our software deals, $50, $60, $70, $80 million. When you have an $80 million software deal with a client in Q2 of a year, you don't have it the next year, that's a big year-to-year headwind. It's a big year-to-year headwind. So when you see these transactional declines in our largest clients, our view, the data says, no, it's being deployed. It's just that they're consuming what they've already gotten. That's the net of this. That's what we've been, that's what I've been meaning, that's what we've been saying about it's driven by flexibility we give our clients. So as we give them flexibility to deploy those licenses across the portfolio anywhere in the world, they deploy them, our S&S grows, our annuity base grows, and the transaction, though, doesn't necessarily happen every 90 days. Let's spend a minute on GBS. Now, we've hit on this topic a couple of times. It was even in one of the questions. A little bit more data. So on the left here, now 2014, we had about a 70-30 mix, 70% in core, 30% in strategic imperatives. We're at 45-55. Right? So obviously, just the momentum here is going to get us past the 50-50 mark this year. The strategic imperatives grew 44%, and the core was down 25%. This is, as Ginny said, the unit of measure, the unit of input to this that drives revenue is labor. As you pull labor away from one thing and put it in something else, obviously the thing you took it away from is going to decline. You have fewer people doing things. And we've been shifting these resources quite aggressively. We put some data here. So between reskilling and upskilling, between attrition and then hiring, we've added 30,000 people. Now, keep in mind, GBS headcount in total is about flat. So obviously, 30,000 people, fewer people doing what was in the core and now into the strategic imperatives. It is the right move to make. We'd like to make it faster, quite frankly. If we could get that core to drop faster and get the strategic imperative, we would do it because the margins are higher. But we got to get through this. We do have client commitments. We are helping our clients run their systems. The bulk of this, actually all of this, is in the consulting. You can see on the right-hand side, we talked about the year-to-year decline driven by just the consulting business. The application management business, longer-term contracts, we can make this shift happen over a longer period of time. So it does happen, but it's really in the consulting business where we're making the shift happen. So the GBS shift, as we said, is an engineered shift. We will get through this. And the software decline in total is really driven by those large client transactional rates, which don't line up necessarily with their usage patterns, which continue to grow. That was my summary. Let's just go to segments. So Patricia showed you kind of briefly what we're going to start reporting. So let me start where Patricia did on 2015, and I think you're all familiar with this. So we reported key branded middleware. We had a product list, if you will, that made up key branded middleware, but we reported key branded middleware, other middleware operating systems, and then you know the rest. So really what we're doing is we're taking, as we look at where the value is being driven in software, and as an example, Robert was here. Don Rippert was up saying, we've taken all of that middleware that's going to drive our clients into hybrid environments, we've put it within that cloud unit now. They are best able to manage now not only the client transition, but all the product elements that have to happen to make sure that integration middleware, that integration software that's so important to make clouds work together and to make clouds work with on-prem, that it can get optimized within the business unit. That's why it sits in the cloud unit. So let's get to where we're going to. I'm going to share. You're going to get a really dense chart in a minute that's going to show all the data we're going to share. So, cognitive solutions. John was up in the beginning of the day with the team, and they talked about Watson. They talked about Watson IoT. They talked about Watson Health. That's all in cognitive solutions. There are other things in there as well. We have a big transaction processing software business. If you ever go to a bank, it's likely that we're managing the transaction. If you never go to a bank, then maybe we're not. But if you ever go to a bank, it's likely we're doing it. So the transaction processing software base, which runs across platforms, sits in cognitive solutions. Global business services, which we talked about a number of times, industry-based, driving those cognitive solutions. So when we put those two together, we're going to keep reporting them separately so you can watch our progress in GBS and you can watch our progress in cognitive solutions, but we're also going to add them up. Again, our point of view is that cognitive is the future of analytics and it's going to be done on an industry basis. It is very logical for those two to be together, but we're going to keep giving you the data on them separately. I mentioned that the integration software that we had in the software segment is going to technology solutions and cloud platforms. Very logical when you think about the importance of that group of software products into building hybrid environments. And then finally, operating systems, will sit attached with the systems business now in the hardware business. So segment disclosures. It looks like a dense chart, but that's because we're giving you a lot of data. I know there's no data on this chart, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So here's what we're going to show you. I talked about each of the new segments. Within that, we're going to show you solution software transaction processing. You can read all the revenue details. Then, in order for it to help you understand our progress in this transformation, in order to help you understand how much we're shifting and what the growth rates of these look like, we're going to give you the strategic imperatives for each of the segments. We're also going to give you the cloud within that. And we're going to give you the as-a-service element, if there is one, within that segment. We'll give you a gross profit. You can see the details. We'll continue to give you both services and software gross profit within the total. And then we'll give you PTI for each of the segments. On top of that, as you know today, we give you total software. We're going to keep giving you total software. By the way, you could get it. You could put it together. We'll give it to you. And we're going to continue to report the total strategic imperatives as we do today for cloud, as a service, run rate, security, mobile, social, the whole bit. So let me show you what some of that looks like. I'm going to show you a chart on each of the segments. I hope you're writing these down because I got to write them down fast. We're going to give it all to you. So I'm going to show you a chart on each segment in a moment. But I want to make a few points about what we really have and our point of view on this business. So Cognitive Solutions, Global Business Services, again, our point of view, cognitive is the future, and you need deep industry expertise to bring that to life with your clients. $35 billion. $35 billion segment, very high value in Cognitive Solutions because it's software. And high value in the services element of that, 15% margins. We think there's obviously room to improve those, but very profitable. We want it to be more profitable, but very profitable. A technology services and a cloud platform. Again, our point of view is hybrid is the destination. We have that point of view because that's what all of our clients tell us. That's also a $35 billion business with very good profitability. Finally, systems, high value. So systems with the operating system element in it made nearly $2 billion. Again, Ginny noted that this business was one that had from a year-to-year perspective, was down over two just a few years ago, and now we're back to pretty good profitability, and now when you add the operating system element, obviously it's high value. So, and you can also see, by the way, how we split out now the strategic imperatives by segment, the cloud, and the as-a-service. That cloud business, the 1.4, for instance, and the one that's the 10.2 that we announced. I'm going to show you that in the next chart, but that's the 10.2. That's the 10.2 cloud business we have. You can see it now by segment. So what do we have? We have three segments. Again, the three segments are linked very, very closely because our view is that you need a hybrid cloud with the data and the analytics and the industry expertise and the cognition in order to bring it all together. But it's also important to see these pieces. So a $35 billion cognitive solutions and industry services business, a $35 billion cloud platform business, and a nearly $10 billion systems business. And since Arvind said you may not pay attention to IGF, I will point out IBM Global Financing at $1.8 billion. It's okay. I was paying attention, Arvind. I heard you. So at the IBM level, I mentioned, and you've seen this data from us, $29 billion in strategic imperatives, $10 billion in cloud. We've talked about the as-a-service revenue. So we'll give you everything on the prior page. We'll give you this, obviously, as well. We'll add up software for you. All of this data should look familiar because that's what we're giving you today. We'll keep giving it to you. Now, let me spend a minute on the progress we've made, and then spend a minute then on each of the segments. So let me align you to the chart. So Cognitive Solutions and Global Business Services on the left, $18 billion, $17 billion, and the mix of strategic imperatives and core within each of those. So you can see that 60% of our Cognitive Solutions business is in the strategic imperatives. Obviously, you know, as I said, that a lot of that transaction processing stuff, very high value, very important, but it's not growing. In fact, it's a declining market. I'm going to show you more, as I said, on each of these segments. But now you can see the mix within each of our segments of our strategic imperatives. Here's the progress we've made over the last 4 years, the last year. 4 points in cognitive solutions, 15 points in GBS. That's the data I showed on the GBS chart, but a lot of shift. So Why is that core declining so rapidly? Because we're shifting the business to these areas pretty fast. 7 points in the technology services and cloud platforms business. Now, 7 points on a low base, But this is also a lot of annuity content, which I'm going to show you in a moment. And then in systems, because of the relevance of the new mainframe, because of the relevance of Power 8 in the strategic imperatives of cloud and in analytics, we've been shifting that business to those demand patterns as well. There is not yet, I'm going to show you storage in a moment. I'm going to show you actually detail on all the hardware brands in a moment. Storage now will start to make some more dramatic moves, more dramatic moves as we add object storage capability into that. Here's now the annuity content. So again, strategic imperatives by segment, improvement across each of the segments as we shift the business, and then a pretty powerful annuity base here spread across the business. Nearly 80% of our technology services and cloud platform business is annuity-based. That's why we talk about growing the backlog. That's a $130 billion business of business that's coming in. It's hard to grow a $130 billion base, but we grew last year, and that's a big annuity content. Good annuity content in cognitive solutions. Less so in GBS. Again, a lot of consulting work in GBS. That's doesn't have an annuity content to it. And in systems, it really is only the operating system. The hardware doesn't have an annuity component to it. But across the portfolio, very powerful annuity content. Let me spend a minute on each of the segments. So cognitive solutions, again, we made our case on all of the things we're doing to build new markets. John Kelly said this isn't just about the $1.2 trillion that sits in enterprise IT. This is really about the $2 trillion that's out there that we think we can go get. We'll go get a piece of it. We're not going to be a $2 trillion company, but we will go get a piece of that. When we look now within that, we have a solution software component of that, and we have a transaction processing component. I mentioned transaction processing declining market. On the solution software side, this is where you can see the effect of the flexibility I talked about in software most pronounced. So the dynamic, remember, in that business is, are clients using your software? Are they deploying? Is that annuity base growing? And within the solution software, yeah, the total was flat, but it was driven by the transaction piece. The annuity is actually growing faster than what I showed you in total software, which was up 1. So the annuity content, the usage of that content is quite good. And then you can see on the strategic imperatives, up 4%. Again, that's a reflection of the transactional mix that sits within that business. So good annuity content, good annuity performance. Our clients are consuming more of it, but we do have this large client flexibility issue evident in the segment. GBS, revenue at 17, down 4. We've talked about the engineered shift. You can see within that, application management was actually up one. So we are engineering that shift in application management. We're moving our clients to the future. We have a bit more lead time, if you will. It's more of an annuity-based contract, longer-term contract, so we can shift them. In the consulting business is where we feel this shift most profoundly, because we're pulling the delivery mechanism, the unit of labor, off one side and putting in the other. And obviously, the productivity impact of that is what we wind up having to work our way through. But you can see, again, on the strategic imperative side, very good performance. So we are trying to drive that shift as fast as possible. In the technology services and cloud platforms, what we have as global technology services, you can see GTS there on the right, up one. That was in the growing side of our 2015 chart I showed earlier. And the integration software piece, again, there's a flexibility component. This is now what both Robert and the team have said. We've moved all of our relevant software to be consumed on the cloud. That's the integration software piece. Good performance also in the strategic imperatives. And then finally, on a system segment base, back to growth last year. You've heard it from us a number of times. A high profit business with the operating system component in it. It had returned to profit, by the way, profit growth and profitability just on the hardware piece alone. But with the operating systems now, we've got good profit performance. This is a high-value set of platforms. A high-value set of platforms with that's also going through the transition. So you can see, excuse me, the shift we're making in each of the hardware platforms. Made a lot of progress in Z, 55 in the core, 45 in the strategic imperatives. But look at the progress we're making in power, 60% now in the strategic imperatives. And then we got more work to do, obviously, on storage as well. So good progress across the portfolio. But the net of that section is more transparency on our progress, more indicators of how we're going in this transformation, That's not all the data we're going to give you. We're going to give you history, years, both annual and as well as quarterly data. We'll have that out before we report. But this is the way we'll report when we report in April. So you'll get more data before then, again. But it's a way to think about mapping the investments we're making against our point of view, which you've heard all day now, our point of view on these segments, and how are those investments yielding, and what's the opportunity going forward. So I think a pretty compelling way to model the IBM Corporation as it transforms, with a lot more signposts along the way that you can now measure our progress. And finally, as I said prior, and we'll reiterate here, you know, we do see a financial model and a portfolio that delivers low single-digit revenue growth. We continue to see a portfolio that is high value. You saw all of our segments make money. All of our segments made money in the old way as well, by the way. All of our segments make money. Differing growth characteristics, and that's why we wanted to give you additional signposts so you can see how those pieces come together. They're not all in growing markets, but we are moving more and more of it into the growing markets. And a great opportunity to continue to pursue high single-digit EPS growth with the cash flow that fuels that machine, allows us both, again, to reinvest and to return capital to you. I'm sure there aren't any questions, so I'm not even sure we need the other Q&A session. But one other point I wanted to make is I got a couple of questions when I was walking around, and I think it's because now, you know, you've seen our disclosure. Our K came out a few days ago. You've seen our disclosure. You may have read the press in Japan, but in our disclosure, we said that the Japan Supreme Court issued a judgment in our favor on a case that's been open for a while. We did obviously consider this when we gave guidance, but the case is now done in our favor. We considered it in our guidance, and I guess my answer is, you know, what does it mean? Well, we considered this in our guidance, and so when we thought about the at least guidance we put out as well as the SKU, all that's consistent with where we are still today, even after that judgment. So obviously, we will continue to accelerate as much as we can the transformation of our business. But again, I got the question a number of times. So why we had everyone together, I wanted to make sure everyone knew that that's consistent with what we had considered for our guidance.